What's up, Disrupt Nation? My name is Anthony Delgado, and today we have a super dope guest. He is an entrepreneur. He is an e-commerce expert, automation pro, the one and only Maxim Trubinsky. He is the founder and CEO of VLM Ventures, the largest one-on-one e-commerce automation platform in the world. His clients have made a combined $3.7 million in 2018. Maxim quickly became one of the top marketing authorities in the world after generating $1.2 million in e-commerce sales and developing a six-figure-a-month consulting business. He's a philanthropist, world traveler, business coach to thousands of students all around the world. And the crazy part that's not in your freaking bio, dude, is that you're only 17 years old. Yo, dude, thank you so much for being on the show, man. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, bro. Thanks for the awesome introduction. Pleasure to be here.
For sure. So awesome. You're freaking 17 years old. You live in Brooklyn. You're generating millions of dollars online with e-commerce. And you know, one of the things that we always talk about, how like e-commerce isn't taught in school, right? It's not taught. Entrepreneurship isn't taught in school. So where did you get your itch? Where was your first introduction to entrepreneurship, to online marketing and sales?
I was actually just sitting in class one day and I was looking at all the people around me and I was just thinking, if they're all going through the same exact education system as me, if they're all going to be pursuing the same colleges as me, like wanting to go to the same colleges as me, and then they also want to pursue the same occupations as me, doesn't that mean I'm exactly like them? Doesn't mean I'm like a sheep and we're all going to have the same exact knowledge, the same exact intelligence, because we were all taught the same exact thing for the last like 15 years. And I realized like the only way to kind of escape the rat race is through self-education. So like when I was around 14 years old, I started reading around like 5 to 7 hours a day. And like I was always kind of money motivated, but for me that later turned into like a passion, just like a way to keep score. Because in reality, like money keeps me up at night. I'm always thinking like, how do I expand all my businesses? How do I grow the amount of sales I'm getting every single day? But when I was just starting off, I was reading around like 5 hours a day about the economy, about marketing, classics. I love my classics. I feel like that's where creativity stems from, because entrepreneurship kind of depends on creativity. How come I'm 17 and I was able to kind of succeed in dropshipping, but some people who put in just as much work as me, they just weren't able to, I guess, put the right marketing campaign together, when I don't doubt that they probably have just as much knowledge as me. I feel like it's because of creativity. But later on, after, first of all, like I come from a really poor family because my parents are immigrants from Russia, and I didn't even have like a desk to read on. I didn't have a desk to do my homework on. So I was kind of doing all my homework and reading on a little bed with like horrible lighting. So I ended up like screwing up my eyesight, ended up like messing up my back as well. Cause like, you know, you read like all slanted and everything. So like my health took a big hit, but I was still educating myself every day. And like, finally got the courage to start my first business when I was 15 years old. It was like a modeling management, right? I just invested like $80 into a studio. I didn't even know how I got the $80 from like birthday presents, but it was like I had only $100 altogether and I had $80. I invested into a little studio. I put it up in my house and I started building an Instagram, right? I ended up getting 20,000 followers on my Instagram just for my modeling management by just like posting models. I had people from my school come for photo shoots for like $30. I would take photos of them. And like that's right there, I saw like the power of social media, because all of the clients, all of the potential models were coming from social media, coming from the Instagram that I was able to build them. And then later on, I made like $1,500 as a 15-year-old. To me, that was insane. Cause like I said, I only had like $100.
Yeah, you were rich.
Yeah, to me, but I was like, okay.
You got no bills. Like that's, you're rich at that point for sure.
Yeah. But to be honest, I didn't spend that money on anything except reinvesting into my new business, which was a clothing brand. But back then I didn't even hear about dropshipping. Like, and after I invested like $1,000 into inventory, I ended up not selling like 75% of it, because I didn't really have any like marketing skills at all. And like as a 15, 16 year old, I ended up losing all my money. And then because of that mistake, because of realizing that like the whole entire flaw in keeping inventory, because you might not sell most of it, so I learned about dropshipping.
So you didn't lose your money. You basically had, you were stuck with inventory that you
couldn't. Yeah, I think I still have it somewhere.
It's still there, right? You could send me one of the shirts, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So your money got tied up in inventory, and you know, that's a really cautious tale for, you know, entrepreneurs of all ages. With e-commerce, you do run that huge risk. There's, you know, that I got started in e-commerce around the same age as you. And we used to always have that problem of you know, they call it like dead stock, right? You'll sell the first couple of products, even with successful products, right? You'll sell the first couple of products, you get stuck with sizes, right? If you buy a whole lot, you get stuck with all the smalls, nobody buys that size. Or in sneakers, you get stuck with the size 13, right? Oh, and then even if that sneaker costs you $50 wholesale or $75 wholesale, right? And you're selling it for $150. You might sell that size 13 for $20 because you don't care at that point. You know, it's like you said, your money's lost unless you sell it or liquidate it or do something like that. And that's why, like you're mentioning, like drop shipping and the advent of these other types of services, digital products, really like changes that for people.
Yeah, exactly. Because someone like myself, a kid, like I didn't even know about, like, look, I didn't even think about lowering the price because I was already selling like all of the products at $20 a piece. So like me by myself, I just thought I was stuck. Like even like for a month or so, I was like, damn, like maybe business isn't for me. I don't got the brains for it. But then like that kind of led to me learning about dropshipping. Like, okay, I could do the same exact thing. Cause I really enjoy it. Like I said, I'm always thinking about how do I grow my businesses? Like how do I help my family as much as possible? Cause like they did incur a lot of debt, like when we just came to this country. But I learned about dropshipping and turns out you didn't even have to keep inventory. You didn't even have to see it. You could ship the products straight from AliExpress straight from China to your customers after they purchase something from your site. So then I was, for an entire summer, I went to sleep at like 4 a.m., woke up at 9 and just studied it like all day. I was still a kid, like it's summer break, you know? So I studied it every single day. I made sure I learned dropshipping from A to Z. I had 5 mentors, and finally after 2 months, I had my first successful store, which did.
Wait. You have 5 mentors. Who are the 5 mentors?
I even had a mentor who I found from my school. I think I had like 2 mentors from my school who were like, were kind of like doing it. They were trying some other stuff. I think they were doing stocks. I also had this mentor named like Noah Brewer who I found on the internet. But like definitely without mentors, I wouldn't be able to like kind of take the shortcut. Cause like I had a lot of people come to me now saying like, oh, I lost a lot of time. I lost a lot of money. For me, like even though I made sure I learned everything from A to Z, I kind of had someone like show me the way when it comes to dropshipping. Like show me the blueprint.
That's awesome. And then when was your like aha moment? When did you like strike? And I think you were about to go into it. Like when did you strike gold and you're like, okay, wow, this is working now.
So like I said, I learned, try to learn everything from A to Z, everything about dropshipping. I even had the 5 mentors and I decided to take every good point from all of these strategies, all of these like marketing game plans and put it all together into my own blueprint, because I had a lot of experience and knowledge from like learning from everyone, I decided to take everything that works, everything which I thought like sounded the smartest, and put it all together into my narrow methodology formula. And like I'm gonna go more in depth on how I kind of like applied the entire narrow methodology to dropshipping, but basically it allows me to never make assumptions in business, always start off broad, targeting like whoever I want. I don't even know anything about fitness. I don't know anything about baby products. But with the narrowing methodology, you always start off with a broad audience. And then as time goes by, you got to study the analytics. And you end up finding this dream audience, which is extremely small, from like 300K to 1 million. And that small audience is the one which you start running lookalike audiences from. And that's the ideal audience who you've been searching for at the start of the campaign. So once that kind of made sense to me, like, the entire narrowing methodology applies to product research as well. In the beginning, like we always have products that we see on other marketers running or suppliers with the most orders. And we could always make a short list of like 10 to 15 potential products we could sell in our stores, but only after we use the narrowing methodology formula and use our filter out all the products which don't get high engagement rates, which aren't in trend, which don't have high profit margins. Only then do we find like those 2 or 3 winning products, which fit all of our criteria, which we could potentially test. And same thing goes with website development. We have our 2 to 3 winning products only after we find the product, which is the true winner by running our campaign. only then do we narrow that general store with like a bunch of different niches into a niche store. So pretend we start off with like one fitness product, which meets all our criteria for product research, one baby product, which meets all the criteria. And then only after we start testing using the narrowing methodology Facebook formula, do we start actually turning our store into a niche store. So like this all kind of made sense to me. Like I wrote it down. I wrote it down on a whiteboard. I'm like, damn, like, so this is how like dropshipping works. This is how marketing works. And I've kind of applied this narrowing methodology formula, not only to run my own products, but to even, like, I even started an SMMA way back like a year ago, and I was doing marketing for some businesses in Brooklyn. And it turns out like I was even selling my own programs, my own services. So it turns out this formula or the strategy like ended up, I could apply it and adapt it to any market. But like that was back then, and I finally had my first successful store. I think it did like $20,000 in sales. Again, back then, I only had like 20% profit margin, 20% net profit. It was like 4,000. But again, that was insane amounts for me. And right away, I started just building my personal brand. I was like, damn, I had like 1,000 followers back then, but I started posting about it. Like people saw my ad spend, people saw my marketing, people saw my sales for the month. And a lot of people just ended up hitting me up. And they're like, oh, I also run a store. I have $30,000 in sales for the month. You want to collab on a store and put our skills together? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then next thing you know, I'm building a team of like 3 to 5 people who all are getting already like some type of like tens of dozens of thousands of sales. And we are end up getting like $50,000 in sales, $70,000 in sales. So just through the power of the DM, I didn't even have it like a personal brand or anything. Just through DM, I didn't have any traveling photos either. I was just a kid back then. I was able to meet such like people with such marketing skills, like similar to mine, developers, people who are experienced in search engine optimization, people who are marketers themselves, email marketers. I was able to combine our skills and like build a dope team. And the most we've ever done was 200K sales in a month. And it was actually in December to January.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations. That's yeah. Super dope, man. Congrats. It's funny. You mentioned the power of the DM, right? I usually talk about the power of the podcast because it's another way to connect with people and, you know, relationships get formed and things of that nature. But it definitely goes down in the DM. I mean, it's the most, in my opinion, it's the most underutilized business networking tool. You know, you can network with anyone. I just booked a Latino influencer. He has like 2.9 million followers and he's like super famous in Latin America. And we just booked him for the show. And it's like all through a DM and all through whatever. I'll throw a hook. You know what I mean? Yeah. Through the DM. Let's see what happens, you know? And I think getting, removing being emotionally attached to social media. I was just speaking to a female friend of mine who's in the Disrupt Nation, and she was having anxiety about posting a picture. And it was a picture when she came down to Puerto Rico. So she's wearing a bathing suit or whatever. It's like, oh, should I post it? I was like, do you want to post it? Oh, I don't want people to think I'm this or that. Or are you this or that? Or who are you? Like, do you know who you are? Because fuck what everybody else thinks, right? Mm-hmm. So like with you were vulnerable. You put your screenshots out there. You know, you put your failures out there, you put your wins out there, and then the universe brings the right people together. So So that's really cool. So you guys teamed up. So how many of you are there and what kind of products are you selling and how do you guys revenue split? Like how does all that work?
So we started off selling low ticket products, like around $20, $40. And then as we all got more experienced, as like I said, we had our losses, we had our wins. We ended up moving on to higher ticket products of around like $200, $400, like even home brewing type of products. Like I said, once you know the strategy, once you know the blueprint, you could sell anything. And to us, high ticket products was always, first of all, like you have the aesthetics, just like you see like $400 orders, that gives you like the adrenaline rush. And second of all, the profit margins are much higher in high ticket marketing. So we moved on to high ticket marketing, and the way we kind of structure, the way like I kind of teach this as well on my Instagram, you got to always use leverage, because even if you're dealing with suppliers, even if you're dealing with your own partners, you always need to have something that the other person wants. And you can't, if you ever want to do business with them, you can't sound desperate, because if you do, they're going to like smell blood. And if they smell blood, you're always going to end off worse in the deal. So when it comes to like even setting up deals with your partners, you got to always like be authoritative with them. And for me, I've tried to like always maintain about, if I'm doing all the marketing, like 30% of the profits. Obviously, like in my opinion, I think it's better to like build an entire team and then split the profits, then try to like master everything yourself and have 100% profits. Because for me, like I could learn email marketing, but I'll never be as good as the guy who's been doing it for the last 5 years. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, in business, you have to be able to scale. Like you have to be able to do teamwork, right? Work with others, you know, even if you could do everything. A friend of mine, his name is Peter Voog, really dope influencer. You should check him out. He talks about the 80% rule. He says, if someone can do something 80% as good as you, you could be better. But if they can do it 80% as good as you, let them do it so you can focus on something else, right? So
yeah.
Being able to give up control, being able to, you know, work with others, sharing the profits, sharing the proceeds is super important for you to scale.
Definitely.
And so low ticket products. So what kind of products? Give me like an idea. I know you're like giving away your secret sauce, but.
No, we started off, it's okay. Like we started off with AliExpress products. We were, to be honest, you could sell everything, exactly what everyone else is selling, but as long as you have the right structure and you focus 100% on all three pillars of success, product research, website development, and Facebook ads. As long as, I see people selling the most saturated products ever, but as long as they're doing it correctly, they're able to make a killing in the business because the products that they're selling aren't just in trend, but they're somewhat of a necessity. So for example, I already mentioned the baby niche, that baby products will always be in demand, always. So as long as you set up the right marketing plan, and you sell one specific product, you will always have the lookalike audience to target the same exact audience with different products in the future. So maybe a specific product like a fidget spinner. I'm not like a fidget spinner is something that runs out of trend. There's in the dropshipping industry, products also run out of trend. You could still use the same type of store and the same type of niche to build an actual long-term brand. So we started off with these AliExpress products. And of course, like everyone tries selling the most typical like AirPods or the typical Halloween masks. But in the beginning, you got to always also make sure you know the difference between mainstream products and the trend products, trendy products. So the mainstream products or a niche product. So a mainstream product is something like the fidget spinner, like those Halloween LED masks. You know what I'm talking about? Twerking Santa, those Valentine rose bears, all those type of products, you can't actually find an audience which is interested in, like, for example, a short-term attention span kind of products, or people who are actually interested in Halloween. Like, if I'm actually want to buy that mask, then I probably just want to go to a party wearing it, and that doesn't mean I'm actually interested in Halloween. So for those type of mainstream products like the fidget spinners, you got to set up Instagram influencers, and you got to target mainstream audiences like Hood Clips, World Star. You know what I mean? Like the mainstream audience is like people who like Kim Kardashian and watch Vines and memes all day. But on the other hand, something like a baby product, which is more niche, it's not mainstream, it's not like crazy and trend, you have to use Facebook ads, because then I just gotta say, ching. But you gotta use Facebook ads because there's an audience out there which you need to find, like I said, and you know that audience will buy from you each time. For example, like the parents, the mothers from 30 to 40 on Facebook, which in Toronto, those specific mothers, like over time, you know they will buy from you each time because you have the analytics to prove you that these type of people are interested in your product. But then the beautiful part is that you can build a long-term brand. That's why I stick to more niche products instead of mainstream products. You could build a long-term brand because once you have that lookalike audience down, you can run a store for a year, for a year and a half. Once you have that email marketing list of like more than 20,000 people, then you build an actual business. You know what I mean? Not just a gift shop.
Definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm. I love that. So I usually ask a question, mm-hmm. and I think you might be one of our youngest guests, which is pretty dope. Mm-hmm. The only one that was younger, but we didn't do a full podcast with him. We just did a shorter interview. We interviewed an 8-year-old kid that was learning to code. That was pretty cool. But besides that, on a full long form, I think you're one of our youngest guests.
Yeah.
So there's a question that I usually ask It is, if you could give advice to your 18-year-old self, what would it be? So I'm going to have to flip that. If you were a freshman in high school and you could give yourself some advice on day one of high school, what would it be?
It would probably be to not contain the costs, because there's a lot of people, like especially me now, they're afraid to kind of invest in themselves, and they're afraid to just invest into business. For example, like the reason why it took me so long to start a business, even though I was so interested in it, because I didn't want to like spend that $150 I had in my bank account, right? Even now, like a year ago, I need to stop getting over the factor of being scared to like make a mistake, to like spend that money on the extra education that I need, which I know will eventually help me in business. And so I kind of stopped containing the costs now, but it's kind of like whatever you invest in, it's always going to end up being in a snowball effect. It's always going to end up benefiting you. So that's probably what I think I would suggest to my 15-year-old, 14-year-old self.
Super cool. Super cool. What mistakes do you see people make in Shopify stores and in e-commerce and marketing in general? What are some like rookie mistakes that you think people could avoid?
So the number one mistake in marketing is people make assumptions. For example, when I start my campaign targeting for that baby niche, right? I start off only targeting mothers aged 30 to 45 in like one specific country. You can't do that because right off the bat, you're making assumptions and that messes up your entire campaign. I always start off extremely broad, from 18 to like 65 plus, worldwide, excluding Asia and Africa, and all genders. Even though if I know it's like, for example, a lady corset, I still start off broad, because I need to see that all of the analytics. And there's a lot of like dropshipping strategies out there that tell you, okay, you need to have an ad set, meaning targeting of 300K to 3 million. That's correct, but only in the end of the campaign do you finally narrow down your entire audience to that small audience. So that's like the number one mistake I always see. And like when people who like don't really do marketing probably want to be able to understand it, but like that mistake kills results fast. Also like a huge mistake I see people making is that they don't have the patience. One out of every four or five products is a winner, right? I had friends who like just hit me up because they're my friends on DMs. They're like, oh, how do I get started? I'm like, follow like my strategy. Like I talk about it on podcasts. I talk about it on my Instagram. And they got started. Their first winning product, the first product wasn't a success and they didn't succeed, right? After that, they just quit. They lost like $50 on Facebook ads. And after that, they weren't willing to test another product. But I was actually in Italy. Like I actually got this guy, this Caesar from the Vatican, right? This bust, I don't know if you see it. And you're on mute for some reason.
Oh, that's real?
Yeah, I got it from the Vatican.
What?
It's like 60.
I thought you got it at IKEA. That's a real Vatican Italian.
It's marble, Caesar? Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I even have that's amazing. Photo. It says made in Italy, fragile. The box was this big, extremely heavy, and I couldn't get it through the airport, right? They didn't like let me take it out, so
dude, that's sick. So you had to drop ship it.
No, like they told me either mail it to like Brooklyn or put it as a luggage, so I couldn't do either, so I kind of like sneaked it through. I don't know, I forgot how exactly I did it. I had to sneak it through.
Wow.
But I was actually in Italy. And I met up with these students who just followed me on Instagram. I was in Bologna and they were just starting out and their first store wasn't a success. And I told them just like, I'm not going to teach. Like I'm confident if you just keep trying and if you continue testing products, you will eventually find a winner. And like now they have a store doing thousands a day and they're always texting me photos. They're inviting me to Italy back this summer. Extremely funny guys. Yeah, like you just got to have patience. For me, it took me like 2 months to actually succeed in dropshipping.
But so during that 2 month period, you're losing money, right? You're spending money on ads and you really don't know if it's ever going to work, right?
Sometimes like what sometimes happens is you end up succeeding in a store. It's you're getting sales, but then turns out like 2 weeks later, you look at the statistics and you're not even profitable. You're like, damn, like. But that happened to me a lot. Like I was getting sales. I just wasn't actually making money. Right. And then sometimes you are profitable for like a week and then you go unprofitable. But once like everything makes sense, once you think that, oh, every time I start a store, I could be successful. just give me like 4 products to test and I know I'll be successful. Once you kind of, like you said, have that aha moment, then like you no longer have that anxiety. And for me, like the best feeling in the world is like knowing you can make money like whenever you want. So like money is no longer just a worry. I feel like that's the best feeling in the world. Once you actually have like the financial freedom and you're not scared that you will not have enough money.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you, you know, you use the word automation in your biography, and that word gets thrown out around a lot. How far from automation, you think like, oh, I don't have to do anything. I can just like mm-hmm. put my ads on and then just like watch Netflix all day. I know that's not the truth. Where, how far from the truth is that? How frequently do you have to edit your ads and tweak them? And what do you recommend for people to monitor their ads?
For my automation program, I'm actually, it's actually completely automated and hands off for the clients. I start off at $15,000. I guarantee them 20K in sales for the month, 30% profit margins in contract. So that just like shows how confident I am that like, I don't care about like just the process. I only care about the result. So like some of these clients don't even like care about dropshipping, but they just want like an extra source of passive income. And that's exactly like what my automation program is about. But obviously have like for people who starting off with a couple $100, like I tell them straight up that as soon as you have the system set in place, you have the business, all you need to do is just automate the ads and monitor them like 15, 20 minutes a day. But the real hard part is finding your products, building your store, and setting up your campaign. Like I said, those 3 pillars. But then after that, all you have to do is just tweak your ad sets, kill the unprofitable ones, scale the profitable ones, like increase the budget, and keep trying new things continuously. You never know what's going to work. You got to try different combinations. For example, I have one interest in my niche, and I'm trying combinations of narrow down gender, narrow down age, narrow down location, narrow down placement, Facebook or Instagram. And if you change up all those combinations with just one interest, I don't know if anyone who did Facebook ads, you could target through interests. Through just one interest, you could have like 10 or 15 different ad sets with different targeting with the same exact interest. So for example, you could have narrowed down by 4 different criterias, narrowed down by 3 different criterias, and then you have different like combinations. Narrowed down by just one criteria. And then there's also engaged shoppers. You could include it, disinclude it. So as long as you just find that initial winning interest for your product, you will never like run out of things to test. And that's kind of like what you got to do like a couple minutes a day. Just every single day, you're trying something new. And if it works, you got to scale it.
So I have a question. You know, we spoke a little bit about products. We didn't get too specific. Is it too late to sell lower margin, lower ticket types of products, right? Like the one thing that I always tell people is like, hey, like you can't sell t-shirts on Facebook ads anymore. The ads are too expensive. But I don't try to sell t-shirts on there anymore. Yeah. So I don't know if that's actually true advice that I give mm-hmm. people, but I always suggest that they sell something with a higher margin than maybe like a t-shirt. What is your advice? Can you sell something on a smaller margin? Like a t-shirt, for example.
To be honest, like I would suggest people starting out at lower ticket products, even free plus shipping, like as long as you follow the structure, it's going to work. Like
your product. What do you mean free plus shipping?
Meaning the product is free on the product is free on your store. You're doing like your ad campaign is that you're doing a product giveaway, but they got to cover the shipping, meaning that the shipping might be $7, but you're buying the product from AliExpress for $1. So your profit margins are still like 70-80%. But just because the customer hears the best word in the entire English dictionary, which is free, they have that incentive to buy. Right. And this entire like marketing strategy works. It's pretty easy for dropshippers to sell products on AliExpress, which are worth $1.50. But later on, if they want to move on to higher ticket, it's going to be much harder because you got to know your break-even point. So pretend I'm selling a product for $100 and I'm buying it from AliExpress for $20. Then I need to spend at least, my break-even point is $80 per purchase. So my cost per purchase is $80. If I'm spending more than $80 per purchase, that means I'm no longer profitable. Because if you think about it, you get one purchase, you spend $80. You also spend $20 on product cost and your entire sale, you made $100. You're just breaking even. You're not making money. You're not losing money. And with higher ticket products, you got to have much more patience, because if I spend like $50 and I still didn't make a sale, that doesn't mean I'm not profitable. That just means that it's higher ticket and I need to spend more per sale. So I've had times when I launched a high ticket store and we would spend like $400 and still not make our first sale. Like, you just got to have that patience. That's why I kind of recommend starting off with lower ticket products, because your cost per purchase could be like $1 or $2, and you see sales right away, and your break even point might be like $15. So like, just an example of a good high ticket store, you sell the product for $100, your product cost is $20, and your cost per purchase is $50. Meaning, so you make 5 purchases and you spend $250 on ads, because your cost per purchase is $50, and you make $500 in sales, $20 on products. So that's $100 on product cost. You end up keeping $150. So like, you got to know your cost per purchase and you got to know your break-even point. It's more complex marketing, but it's something you got to always think about in your campaign.
Interesting. I want to change gears real quick. So, and I know we're running low on time. You mentioned, philanthropy. So let's talk about, how do you give back, and what things are important to you, and how have you found your purpose outside of making money online?
So one thing which has always been a motivation for me is traveling the world. Like, I actually have a twin brother who I've taken to Argentina, Brazil, Rio de Janeiro. I've taken him all over Europe, in Amsterdam, Czech Republic, Austria, Italy, France, Russia for the World Cup. Visited some family actually who I've never met before. And we're planning to go to Africa as well. So just apart from traveling the world, because I love culture, you see, I even got this Julius Caesar bust. I also am planning and in the process of starting my first charity. And it's going to be called like Youth Against Cancer. Like, I'm going to try to use all of my marketing skills kind of to better the world. Because if I could just gather like 10 to 30 influencers who are kind of motivated to like end cancer once and for all, like put more funds into cancer research, then potentially like we could all use skills we know and the influence we have to change the world for the better. And that's something like which if I'm going to start, like, I'm going to put my full priority on. So it's been taking a couple of months to like actually get started and finish everything. But once it launches, I guarantee you, like, the entire Instagram is going to know about it. Everyone's going to be talking about how, like, the entire community is going to get together and just put their mind to it and not focus about the meat, not focus on like the intention, but focus on the result. Like, what do we want to do together, like, as an entire community?
That's dope, man. I love that, Max. I mean, I don't know how much you know about Disrupt, but we're a purpose-driven organization. We're on a mission to use technology, innovation, entrepreneurship to have a positive impact on 3.5 million people that live here in Puerto Rico. So I came down here after the hurricane, and we gave away like food and water and 300 solar panel lights with Hugo Sanchez. Thank you, man. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then we looked and we were like, a lot of the problems were economic, right? Mm-hmm. And like, people have Wi-Fi down here. So like, we're on a mission to prove to everybody down here that like, all they need to succeed is Wi-Fi and a dream. So we host like events and workshops down here. And our whole mission is to, bring the stories of people like you and bring those stories down here to the, mm-hmm. The people that could benefit from, starting a Shopify store or starting an online mm-hmm. business,
Exactly. Like I said, like, I had a couple $100 to start. I had the motivation and I had Wi-Fi. So that's kind of all I needed to succeed. And I had creativity as well. I feel like that comes from the classics. So like, again, I try to motivate a lot of people as well, especially kids that I know, like friends that I grew up with. But I feel like just some people, they're always going to make excuses. So like, just for people listening, like, there's always going to be that procrastination that they're going to use as an excuse to like just not go out there and start a business, not go out there and decide to focus on a result. But like, what you guys are doing, like, I respect that greatly. And I'm pretty sure like Hugo told me a little about it. You guys are philanthropists yourself, I guess. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Thank you, man. Greatly appreciate it. Yeah, Hugo's definitely a huge ally in this movement. And yeah, we're just continuing to push, against all odds. you know, but you never know. You never know who you could inspire, right? You never know who's going to listen to this podcast and just change their whole life. And that's what I've learned over the years. You know, I've had small conversations with people and, you know, I just give them my 5 cents, my 10 cents. And I think, you know, I don't think anything of it. And then they come back to me 6 months later. Oh, dude, I did this with my business, or I took your advice here. And, you know, that's been some of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had. So I encourage people to always, you know, find something bigger than yourself, right? Like find your passion, find your purpose, and, you know, and then figure out how to make money around it. But always find something that's bigger than yourself. I feel like a lot of people go into stuff strictly for money, and that's great. But like, I think you even mentioned it, like, you know, going into it as a learning experience, right? And then like treating it as a game, treating it as a sport, and not just getting too caught up on the dollars and cents. You know, like you said, you're chicken out. If you spent $50 and you didn't make any back, you're going to chicken out if the only reason you're doing it's to make a profit. You know, but you're not doing it only for that. You're doing it to learn and grow and da da da. And now, okay, I'm losing money, I'm losing money, I'm losing money. And then whoop, I figured it out. Right. Yeah. And then your business blows. You know, most businesses, they fail and they quit in the first year. And it takes a business usually 5 years to scale. To scale that they have employees, that they're, you know, really taking it to the next level, it usually takes about 5 years for them to like pop. And most people quit in the first. So, you know, people definitely need to learn, like you mentioned, patience, man. Patience is okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like speaking of patience, like I had a lot of, for example, those Italian friends, like turns out they were dropshipping for like a year before that. And like only then after like just continuously testing products, there's a lot of people out there who just hit me up. They're saying like, oh, this worked. And then 2-3 months later, they're not doing anything. So like if you just got to stay consistent, stay persistent, and stay creative. That's like what I think of it.
Definitely, man. I love that. Yeah. So I have one last question for you. And it is a question that we ask all our guests. It is, what does disrupt mean to you? This is a very interesting story. The word disrupt doesn't have a direct translation in Spanish. Disrupt in Spanish, it means like to interrupt, which isn't the same word. So the word disrupt has a unique startup connotation in the American culture. So what does the word disrupt mean to you?
When I think of disrupt, I'm thinking about, like, for me, like I'm a huge anti-conformist, right? And I feel like most people, they're going through the same exact lifestyle, the same exact plan for life as everyone else. And I don't know if you ever saw that funny meme where it's like everyone's being taken on the same exact path of school, college, family, and that's it. I feel like when someone disrupts like that initial plan society has for your life, then they become that anti-conformist, and distinction, without distinction, there is extinction. And that's I feel like disrupt is, you just got to disrupt what's the plan society has in store for you and take life like by the reins and achieve whatever you want, like live that lifestyle that you've kind of been dreaming about and all of that.
I love that, man. If people want to connect with you on social media, online, your website, where are the best places to connect with you?
So my Instagram handle is Maxim, M-A-X-I-M dot Trubitsky, T-R-U-B-I-T-S-K-I. You can just send me a DM. I answer all of my DMs. Spend like a couple hours a day just like answering questions. So if anyone has any marketing questions, any dropshipping questions, like I'd love to answer. I also have a YouTube channel, which I'm starting to post on a lot. I'm launching my own podcast soon as well. So just like through Instagram DM, if they have any questions for me, they could get in contact. I'll answer whatever they have.
Definitely. We actually recently launched a online course to help people launch their own podcast. So if anybody out there wants to launch a podcast, definitely hit us up. And man, thank you so much for being on the show. I mean, like I said, the Power Podcast is amazing. Power of the DM is amazing. Being able to connect with people like you and tell your story. I'm sure that there's tons of people that are going to be inspired, man. So thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for the opportunity as well.
Awesome, man. I'll see you soon. Hopefully I'll see you in Puerto Rico.
Oh, yeah, I'll come by. All right. Thank you.